Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 4 p.m. and that is New York time, and today is December 12th, and we had some pretty spectacular moves in the stock market today, with the S&P 500 up just less than 1%, but clearly at a new all-time high. That was on speculation that President Trump now has a completed trade deal sitting in front of him, and the world is waiting to decide for him to decide on whether he's in fact going to sign it. I think it is quite likely that he will sign it. If we just look at the interests of the various parties to the negotiations, China has a clear interest in getting a deal signed. On the one hand, their economy is slowing down. They have clearly been the loser from the trade war, and the Communist Party is girding the Chinese population for a much more difficult few years ahead. The semiconductor index has been surging on the upside, and not least because on the one hand Chinese companies are stockpiling the semiconductors ahead of fears that they may be locked out from the market. On the other hand, if there is a trade deal, then purchasing delays that have been announced by CEOs, where there has been a clear fall off in CEO confidence, then that has stalled major capital decisions in terms of spending. Well, if we do get a trade deal, that will change. Well, the S&P is certainly at a new high and closed pretty close to the upper side of that range. When we look at the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, then it was also clearly breaking up and out of the most recent of its small ranges. So that's, I think, a rather impressive performance we're having here as well. So going back to the motivations of the various parties, corporate America and China have a clear interest in a deal. So now let's think about the Trump administration. Well, is his base best served by continuing to display a firm hand against China? Well, I think there is certainly an argument to that effect, but is the Trump re-election campaign best served by economic expansion or an economic contraction? Well, I think the answer is clear, that the Trump administration needs to ensure that the economy is firing on all cylinders by the time we get around to November of 2020, which is only 11 months away. And therefore, he does have a clear interest in having a first phase deal. The first phase deal that could easily take us through to the election. Then, of course, he would have absolute leeway in which to decide whether that was sufficient or not. And we could be in for a second term where there would be even greater trade uncertainty. But, of course, that is out there in the future. What we have in the meantime is some clear good news and the removal of something that a very significant number of investors have been worried about. One of the sectors that did best in here today was banks. And I think it is rather significant here that the S&P 500 banks index is at a new recovery high. And if we just compress the history and go back and look at where the peak was back all the way in early 2007, well, we're really not all that far away from it. In fact, we're perhaps, it's only about 10% below the all-time peak. And considering the range that's been put in over the course of the last 2 years, I think there is clear potential that we're going to see the S&P 500 banks index move to a new all-time high. And let's just consider how unlikely that scenario would have been to anyone talking about it in the depths of the crisis at the end of 2008 or beginning of 2009, it would have been anathema to anyone who had taken such an enormous loss during the crisis. Of course, that doesn't mean that every bank is back at a new all-time high. Citigroup, for example, could take decades before we get back to the high put in before the credit crisis. But that doesn't mean it can't go up from here. What, of course, the banking sector is responding to is the provision of liquidity. So not only do we have the removal of some of the things that investors have been particularly worried about, but we also have the massive provision of liquidity. The fact that the Federal Reserve is in the process of embarking on QE4. Now, regardless of whether they want to call it QE4 or not, the fact that they have added $300 billion in the last 2 months and that they are committed to what is effectively an open market for provision of liquidity to the repo sector. That's unlimited liability, and it puts a really quite significant call on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Now, when we look at the US 10-year Treasury yield, it was higher in here today. We had a significant withdrawal from the Treasury market. This has continued to hold a sequence of higher reaction lows, and we are seeing additional moves to the upside. Now, it has just about unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean, but I think it is more important to pay particular attention to the longer term chart, because the size of the upward dynamic that we saw off the low around 1.5% is the biggest move we've seen since at least 2016. And it does suggest clear resistance for the market in the region of 1.5%. Well, that does hold out the potential that we're going to see the yield march back up towards that 3% level. Of course, 3% is an awfully big psychological Rubicon, and it would really need to be sustaining a move above it in order to complete the base formation. What was, I think, also particularly interesting in here today and was slipping by the wayside in terms of priority of news is that wage growth in Germany is breaking on the upside. This is the highest wage growth we've seen since 2014. But this is occurring against a background where the German economy is not performing, and that holds out the prospect of inflation. Well, German 10-year yields are trading at a negative 26.9 basis points, and that is another yield chart that looks like it can go higher from here. If wage growth is running at 3% in Germany and the economy is barely growing at 0.1% or 0%, then what we have the real potential for is stagflation. And that is something that the new ECB governor is going to have to contend with. We have ample evidence that the market tends to test new Fed governors. That was certainly the case with Jay Powell. Simply looking at the calendar for when he started to take power and then the gyrations in the stock market subsequently, then we have a clear correlation. It was similar when Janet Yellen took over, very similar when Ben Bernanke took over, similar again when Greenspan took over. What the market needed to know was whether the new central banker had been schooled in the requirements of the market. Now, what the market needs to know is, has Christine Lagarde been schooled in the requirements of the market? There is the clear potential here that this incredible move we've seen in terms of compressing yields in Europe is over, and we are now going to see yields pushing back above 0%. The one thing that Europe has not been contending with and didn't really have any expectation for was inflationary pressures. But if this turns into more of a widespread event, then there is the clear potential that bond prices in Europe represent a clear risk. Well, if that's the case, then there is the potential that we're going to see additional upside in the stock market. Europe generally is a much more bond-heavy asset market. Generally speaking, investors need a reason to own stocks over bonds. Well, a sell-off in the bond market could certainly send money in search of a new location. When we then think about the outlook for the euro, it's right in the region of the trend mean. Now the big question is whether we're going to see it push on the upside from here. This is a key level where we would need to see the euro pushing above the trend mean in order to break the downtrend. Certainly the monetary stimulus efforts of the Federal Reserve in terms of adding substantial quantities to their balance sheet is greater than that of the ECB at present. Now the bigger question is, what is the ECB going to do about the potential for inflation versus the requirement for stimulus? Now, if they stop stimulating in order to try and contain the inflationary measures, then that is something that could lead to a higher euro. How likely that is with Christine Lagarde, who is more of a politician than an economist, is, I think, rather questionable. So we really are at a very critical juncture for the euro and the dollar. Gold prices were a little bit weaker in here today. They continue to hold the $1,450 area. With some of the uncertainty being removed from the market, then there is still scope for continued consolidation to go on here. When we look at the fact that gold is trading at $1,460 and palladium is at $1,918, platinum is now at a higher price than gold ever was. And the pace of the advance remains really quite intact, although it is looking increasingly overextended in the short term. Platinum prices will need to sustain a move above $1,000 in order to clearly confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, but certainly the pop on the upside that we've had over the last 3 days is a clear upward dynamic from the region of the trend mean, and it does confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Then when we think about what's likely to occur with China, well, the H-share index was in positive territory this morning. It continues to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. China has been hamstrung by the increasing tensions around the trade war and also internal divisions that have been laid bare by the Hong Kong protests. If the trade war eases, then that removes some of the pressure on China, and that should be beneficial for related shares. When we then think about the commodity index, or the continuous commodity index, it was in additional positive territory in here today. I think now we can see on the weekly chart, even over the last decade, that the downtrend since the middle of 2018 has clearly been broken. We are now back in an upward trending environment for the continuous commodity index, and this is really quite positive action. The Saudi Aramco IPO has done really quite well, and they are now up to their $2 trillion valuation. There is a certain amount of glamour to that valuation. One has to question who in fact has been buying it in order to get it up to that 12 trillion, or excuse me, 2 trillion valuation. That, I think, isn't something that has been answered. And the ability of the valuation to sustain that move is still has to be questioned. The fact that they've had a successful IPO and have been able to get the price up over the course of the last couple of days of trading, that says nothing about the ability of the price to hold those levels. When we look at the oil price, it is right in the region of the upper side of the range that's persisted since June. Moves above $65 have been unable to be sustained, and it needs to do that in order to signal a return to demand dominance. When we then think about the copper price, it has been resurgent over the last week, and it has also clearly broken its downward bias. It has got a rather similar condition to the broader continuous commodity index. Well, there is the real potential that we are back in a reflationary trade for the global economy, and that the at least partial end to the trade war is something that can re-engage animal spirits. And that should contribute to additional upside for the broader commodity complex. So the FTSE 350 mining index is pushing back up towards the region of its trend mean, and it is being, I think, retarded somewhat by the strength of the pound. The ASX 300 resources index in Australia is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Commodity-related currencies should start to do better in this kind of environment. The Australian dollar now is right in the region of its trend mean. There are a significant number of commodity-related currencies that have the scope for upside from here if we do see commodities starting to do better. The Brazilian real, for example, failed to sustain the breakdown 3 weeks ago and now is coming back up towards the upper side of its range and testing, and is likely to test the trend mean over the next few days. If it has got the wind behind it, if there is the potential for some additional upside, it will sustain a move above the trend mean. The South African rand is above its trend mean. It's right in the region of this 14.5 level. It's had a sequence of higher reaction lows since August, but hasn't quite been able to push through that 14.5 level. That's despite the range of problems that South Africa has. So there is a lot hinging on the ability of these emerging market currencies, commodity-related currencies, to push, and indeed the euro or the yen, to push up against the dollar. That's also true of India. And the Indian rupee has closed its overextension relative to the trend mean as well. So there is a lot hinging on whether the dollar is going to continue to sustain its choppy but modest advance, or whether the dollar is in fact going to now break downwards. If part of the reason why people have wanted dollars is as a safe haven against the deleterious outcome from a failed negotiation process, well, then that kind of demand should be ebbing in here. So a lot is going to hinge on whether President Trump does in fact sign the deal. I think it is quite likely, but we haven't had it just yet. And of course, today is also election day in the UK. We'll have a result in the next few hours. But the pound was quite volatile in here today. But importantly, it is back off its lows. Most particularly, it is holding the move above 130. And this does look like a recovery scenario. It at least needs to hold the move above the trend mean in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.